Yeah, I was just reading about Donald Trump Jr. saying that COVID-19 deaths, almost nothing now, almost nothing, on a day when over 1,000 Americans died of COVID-19. And despite the claims that they are entirely in control of the pandemic, the race for a vaccine for it is intense all over the world. Not a magic bullet, scientists warn, but what else do we have? Here in New Zealand, we have various possible vaccines in development under the umbrella of the Vaccine Alliance Aotearoa New Zealand, or VANZ, tasked by the government with establishing a national evaluation and development platform. It's part of the Maligan Institute, and the clinical director of VANZ is Dr. Fran Priddy. Hello.
Hi, nice to be here.
Nice to talk to you. You'll be taking a particular interest in the vote. Did you vote?
I hope so. I voted absentee, mail-in. So we're still waiting to see if our votes have been received in our hometown.
Who knows? Welcome to New Zealand.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a very, very warm welcome so far.
Tell me where we're at on the vaccine. I think we have three in development. Is that a total?
Well, in New Zealand, there's three domestic candidates that are being supported by VANZ. There are other candidates being developed in New Zealand as well, I expect. But these three are still in the lab, so they'd be considered second-generation candidates.
What do you mean, second-generation?
Well, the vaccines that you hear about in the news that are in large trials and there's debate about, you know, that the data will be available perhaps later this year, those are, you know, you'd call that the first round of vaccines or the first generation that were, you know, able to get into the clinic the quickest. Then there's a whole slew of vaccine candidates coming along behind that I call them second generation in the sense that they're going to come later. We're not quite as far along as some of those candidates, but also we're going to be able to learn from what the first round of vaccines has shown. You know, what types of vaccines are going to be effective? We'll know that hopefully in the coming 6 months or so. So this second crop, and including the ones that VANZ is supporting, hopefully will benefit from that and are trying to add technologies, et cetera, that can help improve the efficacy.
So can you just take me through the three candidates that are being put through under VANZ?
Yeah, now they're all still in the lab.
Yep.
So very early days, none of them are being tested in humans yet. So one of them is a very traditional type of vaccine, an inactivated viral vaccine, where you take the virus, the coronavirus, and you inactivate it. You basically kill it so it can't infect anyone.
Is that what you call attenuated?
Well, no, attenuated is when
There's still a bit active.
Yeah, it can still replicate, but it's very weak and doesn't cause disease.
Inactivated
is not going to replicate or cause any illness, any infection. But it's a traditional vaccine technology, and it's been around for a long time, considered very safe. So that's one of the candidates. And what's unique about what New Zealand is offering is to try and develop that vaccine without requiring the typical high level of a biosafety lab or facility that might be needed.
Because it's inactive.
Yes. Well, the process of having a live virus and then inactivating it to sort of go around that with the technology that we're trying to use would make it a much simpler manufacturing process. So that's the first candidate. The second one is also a traditional for the past 20 years vaccine candidate, which is a protein, an adjuvanted protein, basically taking the spike protein off the coronavirus, the protein that sticks off the outside of the coronavirus, and using that as the vaccine antigen. And those types of vaccines are usually given with an adjuvant, something to kind of rev up the immune system. So that candidate is also coming along, and that's a tested vaccine methodology as well. And I think what New Zealand hopes to offer is many groups also are learning a lot from the epidemiology and immune response that we're seeing with the coronavirus vaccines right now to understand exactly what part of the spike protein will be most effective and how to present that to the immune system. So those are the things that second generation candidates will be able to really benefit from that learning. Mm. And then the third one is a nice collaboration between New Zealand and Australia, academic groups looking at a pan-coronavirus type vaccine. So meaning including antigens from more than one type of coronavirus, ideally to be able to induce an immune response and protection against future coronaviruses. So that's also very second generation. You know, we don't know a lot about what will induce cross-reactive responses. But I do think that that's a really important need for the future, is to figure out how can we design a pan-coronavirus vaccine that'll protect us from future unknown coronaviruses that may jump into humans.
That seems tricky. I mean, it seems important given the likelihood of that happening in the future, but pan-coronavirus vaccine, it's like one size fits all.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's we'd be designing it with a lot of unknowns, but the idea is that these coronaviruses, you know, we've been exposed to three so far as humans, probably more than we know, but the three that we've documented so far, the SARS-1, it's now called SARS-1, and MERS, and now this SARS-CoV-2. So actually, this is no surprise, this pandemic. You know, it was to be expected. And so we can definitely expect to have more coronavirus infections. So it's important to figure out how can we protect against future strains.
Because I understand this is one of the intentions of VANS, how will VANS get New Zealand early access and ongoing access to vaccines, to a vaccine, should it become available?
Mm-hmm. Well, access to vaccines in the immediate term is really the role of the New Zealand government and the various task force, and there's a task force that's addressing that specific issue, vaccine purchasing and access. So, and VANS is really separate from that government effort, but we are offering advice. And I think in the long run, the goal for VANS in terms of access is we can offer advice on vaccine technologies and science to the government, of course, but also for New Zealand to be able to have the scientific infrastructure to do vaccine development from the lab. And VANS also includes linkage with manufacturing groups and work to try and build capacity within manufacturing facilities for these different vaccine platforms. So the idea is to identify vaccines that could be manufactured here. Some part of manufacturing could be done in New Zealand, and that does help you get long-term access if you don't have to purchase or worry about global supply. So that's more of a longer-range goal, not an immediate one-year goal.
We don't manufacture vaccines at all in New Zealand at the moment, do we?
Most vaccines here are purchased from abroad. There is animal vaccines that are manufactured here.
And so that would be a huge thing if we had the capacity to manufacture vaccines here.
Well, there is capacity, it looks like, and we've done a review of the capacity here, and there's certainly capacity to manufacture vaccines. But one of the questions is the different vaccine platforms have different manufacturing needs, so some types of technologies could not be manufactured here at this time, and some could. And so that's something that we're looking at, what investment or, you know, capacity building would be needed for certain types of technologies, or should we focus on technologies that can currently be manufactured here? And also, there are different steps in manufacturing, and it could be that the end step is what's done here. You don't have to do all of the steps.
What do you think the chances are of a vaccine emerging by, the middle of next year?
Oh, I thought you were going to ask me by November.
Not even, right?
Yeah. No. I think a year ago, it would have been wildly optimistic and inappropriate, actually, to make these predictions about having a vaccine by the end of this year or middle of next year. But now, this past year has been really topsy-turvy and transformational in terms of science, I do think that we will have data early next year, some indication of whether one or more of these vaccines might be effective. And then there'll be a plan to start rollout. So I think for the average person, I think, you know, by the end of next year, there's potential by the end of next year that they might have access. I think for people who are at risk, it could very well be a lot earlier, which is really astounding in the vaccine field to be saying things like that.
There is a report that immunity from COVID-19 does not last for very long.
Mm-hmm.
Is that worrying you in terms of the vaccine development?
No, I think that I think that's challenging in terms of non-vaccine interventions, because you know the idea of building up enough immunity through community infection is, you know, that's not going to work probably if your immunity wanes. What the studies showed was that the antibody levels waned. Now, usually immunity follows your immune response, you know, like antibody levels, but we don't really know if having antibody, how much it protects you. Typically, having antibody after infection does give you some protection. That's common with viral infection, some viral infections. We don't know enough about coronavirus to really, you know, SARS-CoV-2 to say that a waning, you know, what antibody really means at all. But
What do you mean? I mean, antibody, that's the thing, right?
Well, the reason I say that is because we've only been dealing with this, the epidemiology, you know, studying how the infection progresses and the natural history of the disease for less than a year. So what you need to have is enough time to follow the course of infection to understand, are people who are infected and then who recover and have an antibody response, what is the rate of getting infected again in the next, you know, 5-10 years, and ideally lifetime? You want to see how long the immunity lasts.
Because effectively you're saying you don't know how many antibodies you need to fight off another infection.
Well, yeah, we know very little right now. I mean, we're starting to collect that data. You know, it just takes time. And there have been studies showing that your antibody level does wane after several months. It decreases, is what I mean. There's also studies showing a very small number of cases have been detected where people were infected once, recovered, and then apparently were reinfected with a slightly different strain and got sick again. That's a very small number of cases that have actually been detected. It could be that happens more frequently. We just don't have enough data yet. It's really very early. So anything you say about coronavirus, you know, may change in the next month based on the data that we're getting. But in terms of vaccine development, no, the waning antibody, the idea with vaccines is that you're really generating a huge immune response or a very specific immune response to a specific part of the virus. And then you're, through that strong immune response from vaccination, you're triggering the immunologic memory. There's our immune system has a memory component, and you're triggering that long-lasting immunologic memory that should hang around at a low level in your body or be re-stimulated to a very high level once you're exposed again. So I think that with the type of vaccines we are working with now, I just mentioned a couple of the technologies, but there's several other technologies we can induce a very good immune response. And the early phase 1 clinical trial data that's been published shows that you can get a good immune response with these vaccines.
When you say that we're engaged in the race for a vaccine for COVID-19 in transformational science, what do you mean?
Well, I mean that it's been a transformational 9 months it's really been built on, you know, decades of scientific progress. But what you've seen is that because of all the work that's gone in the past 10, 20 plus years, and particularly in the vaccine field in the past 20 years, where in the vaccine field and related biological sciences field, we've been applying a lot of modern technologies such as sequencing or decoding the structure of small proteins in the body, for example, all those technologies and then vaccine development have advanced to have a number of different technologies for vaccines. And we've been working on these very hard against some other viral infections that we haven't been very successful at making vaccines for, other complex infections, not just viral, but HIV, TB, malaria, other emerging diseases like Ebola, where we have been successful at making vaccines. So we have decades of experience now with these different platforms and different technologies that are needed, like sequencing to understand a virus. And basically all of that science has been rapidly applied to this single virus, you know, in the past less than a year. And you can, it's amazing to see, it is transformational to see what the concerted application of all that science and effort can do. I mean, the fact that we have, you know, hundreds of vaccine candidates and 8 or 9 in these huge efficacy trials right now is really transformational. The speed of going from sequencing the coronavirus to getting it into the, you know, lab in a viral vaccine, into animals, into humans, is unprecedented. So that's the transformation I'm talking about. It's taking the science transformations over the past 30 years and then applying them in 9 months.
As you mentioned, your previous history involves searching for a vaccine for HIV, malaria, not yet. Why are those proving so hard? HIV because it's so mutable, I imagine. What about malaria?
Well, malaria is, actually, that's not my area of specialty, malaria, but malaria is a complicated infection that has several, goes through several stages in the body. And that's part of the reason why it's challenging to make a vaccine. I think for HIV, a viral infection, you're right, it's exactly because it has, is very mutable, as you say, or we would say has a lot of genetic diversity. So it can quickly change its outer coating, the sugars that coat the outside of the virus. It can change those. It frequently changes them as a way to evade the immune system. So when you develop a vaccine that targets a particular part of the HIV surface, then because the virus mutates so quickly, it will evolve away from being able to be impacted by that vaccine because the surface sugars change so quickly. So HIV is very variable. If you look at across viral infections, the ones that we've been able to make vaccines for, effective vaccines for, they tend to be not very diverse at all. So like the flu, that's very diverse as well in terms of the strains of the flu. As you know, we have to make a new vaccine every year. And that's kind of similar to HIV. And we've not been able to make a highly effective flu vaccine. We do have a number of good flu vaccines, but it's been a challenge. Hepatitis C is another viral illness. It's very variable genetically, and that's been a challenge for a vaccine. But the good news about coronaviruses and SARS-CoV-2 is that it's really not very variable at all. So that's very positive. I think that's one of the reasons why there's been these positive predictions that we should be able to get a strong, effective immune response and an effective vaccine.
When it comes to human trials, then, what would you do? Take a random selection of people and see if they have a lower incidence of COVID-19 after having the trial vaccine? How would you do it?
Yeah, so if you're testing for in the final, next to final stage of testing, what we call a phase 3 efficacy trial, you've already tested the vaccine in smaller numbers, you know, to make sure that there's no immediate safety issues and to make sure it gives an immune response. So then you're going to go into a much larger number of people. In the case of these trials, they're 15 to 70,000 people. And yes, you would, you don't randomly select, but you recruit people. So it's voluntary. People volunteer to be in the study, but you can focus on certain populations and try to enrich the population for, let's say, in the U.S., they did enroll a large numbers of non-white populations because those populations were more impacted by COVID. And then you randomize. When most people have agreed to enroll, then you randomize them 1-to-1. So half will get a placebo shot, placebo vaccine. It's basically salt water, saline. And half will get active vaccine. And then you'll follow them over time and start to count how many COVID-19 infections develop in each group. And almost all of these trials are looking not for hospitalized cases, but for COVID infection with symptoms.
We await developments with interest. Thank you. That's Fran Priddy, who is involved in the search for a vaccine for COVID-19. She's clinical director, Dr. Priddy, of VAANZ, or the Vaccine Alliance Aotearoa in New Zealand.